This episode of East Meets West is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to east.hover.com.
Welcome to East Meets West, episode 222. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
This episode is only available in audio. It is not live because Roger and I are time traveling.
Yes, we are. In the manner of speaking.
We are in different places. We're two places at once right now. Like at this very moment that you are listening to this brand new episode, Roger is in the Pacific Northwest at the Penny Arcade Expo, whereas I am on the entire other side of the continent in Atlanta. On the at the Dragon Con,
thereby bringing the show from sea to shining sea.
True, very true. So we are America today,
and let us hold out hands and cross the country.
I'm east, and Roger is west,
as the name has always been.
And next week we will meet. But yeah, so we figured, I don't even know why we've skipped weeks before, but we figured, you know what, let's record a little episode to throw in the audio feed. And then I guess next week we'll talk about what the conference is like. We don't want to reveal that too soon, right?
We can explain to them, what our respective, attendee conferences are. So just so they understand where we're at.
Okay, yeah. Why don't you start with PAX?
So I am going to – this is the first time to PAX, which is the Penny Arcade Expo and not the Christian cable television channel. It is essentially the two guys who started the Penny Arcade comic at pennyarcade.com, penny-arcade.com, and it became it literally tapped the vein of the video gamer. Around the world. And so what they did was they built a video gaming convention based on it. So they will have video games. They'll have speakers from various game developers to talk, as well as developers with, you know, betas and stuff of games that, you know, they want to get the reactions from players and stuff. So if you're into video games and you're in the Seattle area this weekend, check out Penny Arcade.
It's like E3, but for people who actually play video games rather than for in the industry, right? Is that
pretty much?
I
think that's a really good summation of it.
And then I will be at Dragon Con, which is a conference for dragons. No, it's a conference. I think it. You know, I need to get more into the history of it, but I think it used to be more focused on sci-fi writing. It seems to have a lot of history in authors and books and series. And it has branched out of that. There's a lot about TV shows, a lot about movies now. But it is definitely more focused on the consumers of science fiction and fantasy than the producers. So, again, sort of the PAX to Comic-Con's E3 is the same relationship there. Dragon Con is much more fan-centered, I think.
It is definitely a fan-oriented convention, although it is a for-profit compared to the San Diego, which isn't. But it is geared toward ensuring that the fans there are held in the highest import, as opposed to the way San Diego's gotten, where it's basically now a venue for Hollywood and studios to kind of market their material.
And I'm always quick to say that that's not a bad thing, that Comic-Con is geared. You know, Hollywood's right up the road there. How are you not going to take advantage of the fact that you can get all of these directors and stars to come? And it's awesome that you can have the chance to hear these revelations. I prefer to hear them later on YouTube than to actually wait in line, but obviously I'm in the minority because thousands of people wait in line to go into these ballrooms and hear what's going on. I think there's a place for that. Dragon Con is just much more human scale. So it's easier to get into most of the panels. They have some long lines for certain things, no doubt, but for the most part, you know, you've got a lot more to choose from. It's a lot more dispersed because it's not in a single hotel or a single conference center. It's in like four or five hotels all through downtown Atlanta. They're all right next to each other, so it's easy to get from one to the other. But it provides for more mixing of the crowd, I feel like.
It's definitely a different vibe. I wasn't sure what to expect. But, you know, if you haven't been, it's pretty fun. I will say that it's better to go with people, you know, like friends, because, you know, I've known people in the past who've tried to do meetups over there, and because it's so diffuse, that it, you can have a hard time doing that unless you know those people, unless you've known those people for quite some time.
Yeah, I did a meetup last year in the Marriott, and it worked out okay. I don't, you, what did we get? We got 20 or 30 people there.
Yeah, it was hard to tell because there was a lot of other 60,
yeah, because there's a lot of other stuff going on. This year, the meetup happened already at the Sundial restaurant at the top of the Westin. So we're expecting a bigger crowd because we have a reserved venue for that. But yeah, it's I don't want to go too much more on the conferences because I imagine we'll talk about it next week. But I am really looking forward to it. You know, while you're listening to it, you've already probably seen, or at least you've had the chance to see on Twit what I've been doing. But this will be different. Last year, I just kind of hung out and did two panels, and that was it. It was very low key, and we did our meetup, and we tried to record East Meets West from out there. The bandwidth was not really cooperative. This year, I'm doing like six panels. Wow. Sword and Laser is in a huge ballroom instead of in a small room, and we're doing a live streaming Twit coverage. So we'll be walking around with the live view pack, talking to people in person, just, you know, for hours, going to parties, doing all that kind of thing. So it's going to be interesting how it all works out.
It should be. You'll know how it works out after when you're listening to this, because you'll be able to see it.
Yes, already know how it worked out.
So
it's kind of daunting having no plan like that, just kind of wandering out. But if you're going to do it, DragonCon's the place to do it because it's navigable. It's not overwhelming like Comic-Con where you just get stopped. But it also has enough people wandering around from place to place that you could find some interesting folks to stop and chat and talk about their costumes and what kind of stuff they're into. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of people we end up talking to. It'll be me and Brian Brushwood.
Oh, interesting. He'll fit right in.
And you know what? He's totally right. This is Tom. I'm actually at Dragon Con right now. Things are going great. Brian totally does make us fit in a weird way. But I actually have to tell you about our sponsor, Hover.com. Hover is all about making domain name registration and service simple. Over the years, domain registration sites have got a little complicated, to put it nicely. You have to make a lot of clicks just to buy one, and they barrage you with offers and all of this. Hover is for people who just want it simple. They don't sell a ton of services. They focus on making it easy to register and manage domain names and email. They used to be called Domain Direct, which has sold domains since 1997, so they know what they're doing. They have a complete resource area of their website with videos that show you how to transfer domains, how to manage domains. You can learn about forwarding there as well. And best of all, they have a no-hold policy for customer service calls Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You will not be put on hold. When you call, you get a live person. No phone trees. It's simple domain name registration. So check them out today. If you'd like to support the show and you've got a domain name to register or you're just thinking about registering one, go to east.hover.com and use the code EAST to get 10% off registering your new domain name. Visit them today, east.hover.com.
So, what else has been going on that's been keeping you occupied?
Well, I've been playing StarCraft 2.
What do you think?
I like it. You know, the only problem is on my MacBook Pro, which is about a year and a half old now, getting close to 2 years old. It takes a long time for the missions to load. And when I've said that to people, they're like, oh, yeah, slower computer. But when I say it takes a long time, like sometimes 4 or 5 minutes. So what I've been doing is when I play a mission, you know, and I'm in the setup and I pick the mission and it starts to do the progress bar and I know this is going to be several minutes. I'm going to have to sit here. I pull up the strategy guide from IGN on my iPad. And I have it just sitting there, and I kind of read through the walkthrough so that I can get a sense of what this mission is going to be like.
Now, have you played the original StarCraft?
No, technically yes, but maybe twice. I mean, it's not something that I've played a lot of.
Yeah, I've had a lot of time to devote to it. Unfortunately, these past few weeks have been a lot of other things going on. So hopefully after I get back, I'll have some time after I do jury duty to kind of sink my teeth into it. it's kind of funny. I you know, kind of changing courses here. Like, jury duty is one of those things that, you know, as soon as I told everyone at work, it's like they started, came out with the advice how to get out of it. Well, you need to say this. You need to do this. You should do this and this. And it's just like, I always found it funny. That's the immediate reaction you get when you do or get a summons for jury duty.
There's got to be a psychological principle there, right? Because the idea is that we hold very dear a trial by a jury of our peers. And the idea, the theory behind that is when we have someone put in the dock, we don't know if you're guilty or innocent, which people forget. And we want to make sure that the power structure represented by the judge and the lawyers can't just railroad people into being guilty or not. So you have a jury of your peers that will sit there and judge you based on their similar perspective. So in the nuances of the law, obviously they have to make a decision based on the instructions of the judge, but they can have that same sort of point of view that the person being tried would, and understand how the law would apply to them in that same situation. So anyway, the idea of sitting on a jury, everybody wants that, right? But so why is it that it is seen as such a burden? Is it the way it's implemented?
You know, it's funny. Ever since I was a kid, that's kind of the general kind of feeling about it. Like, the way people approach it was something or something to be avoided, something you need to get out of. Doesn't matter whether or not the case is of, you know, such importance because a man's life might be in the balance, or, you know, someone's, you know, claim to millions of dollars in inheritance might go out the door. It's just like, well, you know, I got some better stuff to do than to go to sit in some courtroom for a week or 2 weeks or even a month and listen to, you know, lawyers argue back and forth.
Well, a lot of times people feel like, well, I can't take this time away from work. And it's not necessarily about pay. In some cases, it can be if you're a contractor, right? And if you don't work, you don't get paid. Then the court is going to give you a small amount of money, but it's not going to make up for your lost income. And I think that's a fairly legitimate concern. But in some cases, people will get paid for being on a jury. Their company will pay for the time that they're on the jury. So it's not about that. It's just people feel like, you know, I'm going to fall so far behind on work, and I'm going to have to sit there in this, you know, in this jury, that it's not about getting paid or not. It's about, I'm going to have to continue to do my job in the off hours that I'm not sitting in the jury. So in essence, I have two jobs. And this jury system was conceived in a time when work was not as efficient as it is now, where it was possible to take 2 weeks to be on a jury perhaps and not fall terribly behind in your practice or in the things that you're doing, because we didn't work as hard. I'm not saying people weren't hardworking. I mean, we've gotten so focused on productivity that there is no wiggle room in a schedule. And anybody who's ever taken a vacation from work knows this.
I think part of it's the unknown. You don't know how long it's going to go. You don't know what the case involves. You don't know if it's something where one lawyer will literally try to bore the jury to death, you know, with stupid facts and stuff like that. And I think that kind of, you know, especially in this day and age, it really screws up, because people love, you know, they might not be super organized, but they like to have a timetable so they can plan things around it. And if you have this one thing that's kind of a big question mark, it's hard to plan around it, right? It's like being unemployed. You can't plan anything, you know, for a while unless you've really saved up and you can afford the time off, like, you know, a half a year or a year without having regular work. You know, you have that luxury. But if you just say got laid off and it's like, oh, I need to look for a job, you're not going to be planning your next vacation. You're not going to be planning, you know, what brand new gadget you're going to buy or anything else. Your first and overriding concern is to get a job, and that kind of covers everything else. And I think people are worried that of the time commitment, because they don't know what it is. I think if someone said it's a week long.
Yeah, but they do. When you go into a jury, the judge will say, this is a 2 week case, this is a 1 month case, this is a 6 month case.
Yeah, but I don't know yet until I go there, until I call up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, until you actually get in the selection. But even then, it doesn't matter. It's I don't think it's so. I think it's not so much about the uncertainty of the time. It's about the amount of time. And they're almost always at least 2 weeks. You don't get a week-long jury trial. Most of the time, they're longer. And we just have built no flexibility into the schedule. People work more now than they ever have, even though we supposedly have this 40-hour week. That 40-hour week brought the factory hours down, right? But mm-hmm. it didn't bring the overall work level down, because as everyone moved into white-collar jobs, well, that 40-hour week now became, you know, a unlimited week. Because in white-collar jobs, they expect you to do things from home, to do things on the weekend. And now in the internet age, to check your email and answer your phone and respond to text messages. And so we've actually kind of hit a bell curve where we have expanded the amount of demands on your time. And there's just no room to put in 2 weeks, you know, focused on a jury trial. I don't have time for that.
I wonder what a better system would be, though. Would it be that you're just scheduled like every... You have to block. It's like literally like signing up for like the National Guard or the Reserves where you get 2 weeks out of the year that you're supposed to block out for civic duty.
I think that might be a good idea where you know when it's coming. So every year you plan for it. It's like, you know, it's like Christmas break, right? Christmas break is that same problem. It's an impingement. It's a lot of time off where a lot of other people are going to be gone, but everybody knows it's happening, and so everybody plans for it. If everybody had a civil service week or 2 weeks or whatever, then that could happen. The problem is with juries, though, they vary. So 2 weeks is not going to be enough for all juries. What do you do for those six-month cases?
I don't know. I mean, at some point, you know, if they know... See, like, how do you pull? I don't know. It's. I think it's. Yeah, it's that commitment, but it's also that uncertainty. I think it's both.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a combination, definitely. The certainty of knowing when your jury would be coming, I think, would help, because you could plan for it rather than just having this mail arrive and all of a sudden, like, 2 weeks from now, I'm going to have to call in for jury duty. Yeah, it gives me some notice, but it always seems like it comes out of the blue. You don't know that it's coming every September.
Let me ask you this. Do you believe that the jury should be within the same courtroom during the trial?
What do you mean?
Like, I'm just wondering if technology permits, you could do it remotely.
Oh, if you could do it by Skype? No, I think you need to be in there. I think you do, because there is so much information that is lost over an audio connection, over a video connection. There's no substitute for being there. Not that you can't get a lot done over a video conference. You can. But there's no substitute for actually being in the same room, for being able to direct your attention to any part of what's going on without having to point a camera or ask for it to be repointed. I do think you have to physically be there. Maybe not for every trial. Maybe there are some trials that are very simplistic, where the facts could just be submitted. There might be some sections, but the really important stuff, you want to be able to not miss a beat and not have something get in the way because it wasn't quite in the shot. You know, oh, I didn't quite see that guy's expression when he said that. You know, not that those facts, you know, you should judge merely on the facts of the case, but the facts of the case can be mutable sometimes, and nonverbal indications are important and should be accounted for.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, it's interesting because, you know, especially with cases that involve, say, child, children, you know, there have been instances where they say, well, you know, the plaintiff or the witness can actually be in a different room because of their age or because of
certain.
And I'm wondering.
And they do video depositions. I was on a jury once, the only time I've been on a jury, and one piece of evidence was given by videotape.
Bill Clinton did his deposition by video.
Yeah, it's actually not that uncommon. So, I mean, I guess there's an argument to be made for that. But, you know, the judge being able to sit there and look right at the jurors and say, hey, this is what I want you to do. This is what you need to take into account. I just think the whole system works better when you're there. It's the same reason that I believe in manned exploration of space, because there are just things that you can do faster and better when you're actually there than having to operate something remotely.
Perhaps. Or maybe you're just a romantic.
Yeah, you can undermine my argument all you want. Use epithets if you wish, but there's no changing. I mean, which would you rather do? Would you rather fix someone's computer by sitting at it, or would you rather talk to them over the phone and tell them how to fix it?
Well, I know, Tom. I would use GoTo Assist Express.
No. I'm not trying to do an ad. We don't have any ad this week.
Oh,
I'm
nuts.
I'm just saying, would you rather be hands-on or with the computer when you fix it, or would you rather tell someone?
Partially joking with the GoTo Assist Express, but the technology enables me, especially when it comes to things like my dad. I mean, he's always calling me every other week with a computer issue.
Right, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying GoTo Assist. I'm saying, would you rather have your hands on that operating system, whether it's remotely or not, or would you rather tell him over the phone?
I'd sooner do it myself,
right,
is what you're asking.
And which is better if it involves a wide range of problems, remotely logging in or being able to actually pull that thing apart and look to see, like, wait a minute, is there a loose panel?
Well, it depends on what this metaphor is leading up to.
I'm just trying to say, like, some things are better in person.
Yes.
It's easier to troubleshoot in person than it is remotely.
Yeah, but it depends. I don't think it's a blanket statement. I think the reverse is true as well. I mean, sometimes some things can be quickly done. No doubt.
I will grant you that. I mean, there is plenty that can be done by a robot. We've seen that with all of the Mars rovers.
Wait a minute. Are we talking about space exploration or court?
I'm talking about space exploration now, but. we'll lead back to court eventually, I'm sure, right?
Well, the thing with space exploration, especially in any sort of exploration that's essentially in a hostile environment to the human to a human being, is that you spend so much money, you spend so many resources on making or at least developing a habitat to keep the person alive.
Sure.
That I think. There would be a huge not only amount of cost savings, but you radically cut down the amount of risk.
You know what? There's plenty of people willing to take that risk, and I think they should be allowed to take that.
If they can pay for the rest of the things that go with it.
I think at a certain and I think you're right. I think we should exhaust what we can do with robots and remotes first, because there is a lot we can do for low cost. But at a certain point, you're going to run up against a wall where it's like, you know what? It's actually going to be more efficient if we have a person
there. I agree, but at some point we'll develop a technology that will allow us, that will be make it feasible where you're not literally spending, a quarter of the GDP.
Maybe we will. That's just looking down the road. But I guess if we developed a technology that allows me to be in a courtroom and see and hear everything that I could see if I was there, then it wouldn't matter if I'm actually in.
Let me ask you this. If court was enjoyable.
But if we could develop a technology, I mean, that solves all of our arguments, right?
Yeah, and that's pretty much a lot of what most people end their arguments with.
Hitler. Oh, wait, sorry.
If you could.
I thought people ended arguments by Godwin's law. Nazis.
If you could make court, or at least the trial process, a little more entertaining, not unlike night court with.
I found the court process very intriguing, very entertaining. It was a freaking slip and fall case. Like this woman's trying to sue the city of San Francisco for an unsafe sidewalk because she fell down and twisted her ankle. Sounds horribly boring, but when you actually got into it and the legal arguments and the drama of the witness taking the stand and talking about the pain and agony she suffered and all that, it was interesting. It was entertaining, but I don't think a lot of people realize that before they actually serve on a jury.
When you heard about what the case was, did you automatically kind of in the back of your mind create like, oh, that's a stupid.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Cause I didn't know what it was. I got little hints from the jury selection, but not a lot. I knew it was someone suing the city and that was about it. I didn't know exactly why. So it seemed like it might've been a minor case. And then when they finally like sat us down, gave us the, swearing in of the jury and everything and told us what the case was, I was like, oh man, really? I got on a slip and fall. This is just going to be idiotic. And one of the jury instructions was, we know that there is, a a common belief that these sort of lawsuits are frivolous. I, as the judge, want you to clear that from your mind and judge on the facts of the case. I will instruct you what you need to find and how you need to find it, and you will decide based on the law, not because you think prejudging that things are frivolous. They had weeded for that in the jury selection. So they had gone after people who thought, they had asked a lot about, do you think some lawsuits are frivolous and this and that? So they had weeded out a lot of people who might have thought lawsuits were frivolous, but there was a specific instruction from the judge to try not to have that perspective right from the beginning.
It's I don't know. I've always been wondered about that. Like, you're essentially loading the jury. I mean, is it?
Well, yes, you are loading the jury, and that's a part of the law is how do you, you know, each side gets to a certain amount of no's and a certain amount of vetoes. So you want a balanced jury. You want a jury that's going to not come in with prejudgments, and by allowing each side to kick people out and excuse people and ask questions, you reach a balance where you should have a jury that isn't going to have a lot of prejudices that way. And then the judge is going to load the jury up with the legal stuff. And that's his job, is to say, okay, here's the law that you have to interpret.
Yeah. It's so, I'm still amazed at how such a critical process of the legal system is, you know, filled with, you know, so much ambivalence, you know, by the wider public, like, you know, and almost apathy. It's like, jury duty. I mean, I kind of went through that when I saw, I was like, jury duty.
Well, yeah, and I, you know what? Even having been on a jury, I still do that, because to me, it's like, I don't want to have to deal with my schedule for that.
Yeah.
What am I going to get out of it? All right, well, sobrilliant.com/EMW is the place to find our blog. You can make comments on what you think of jury duty, how you think it should be fixed, how it's done in your country, if they do it differently than we do. If you've figured it out, let us know. Thanks for watching. We'll be back with a live episode next week. Roger will be talking about Penny Arcade Expo.
All right, bye.
Bye.